Rahim, thanks for talking with us.
Oh, pleasure being here, really.
Tell us why you were drawn to the oud.
When I was a little boy in elementary school, exactly when I was in second grade, and my teacher, Arabic teacher, he's not a musician actually, he sometimes bring his oud and and he make the sound and sometimes playing for us some songs and some folk tunes, and I just came fascinated by it. So one time I just asked him if I can just touch it. And in Middle East, in Arab countries, teachers like a god. You can't face them. I mean, you can't look at them in the eye, and you can't touch them. I mean, just like untouchable people there, I mean, because we consider them really like a god. So I was just really afraid, and I did ask him if I can just touch it.
What did he say?
And he said, "Are you serious?" I said, "Yes." So he said, "Come on in." So I went there, and I reached my hand to the oud, and I touched it.
What was it? What did you feel? What was
that? It's just like I didn't sleep this day. I mean, literally, I didn't sleep. I mean, I was just that intoxicated, and I feel like, oh, wow, what a joy. What a beautiful joy. After 2 to 3 days later, and he brought the oud, and I said, can I touch it again? Because this is feeling of joy, that little boy, you know, second grade. So he said, yes. And he gave it to me now. He said, you need to play it. I said, yes. And I was just really tiny, teeny, teeny, tiny. And the oud is almost my size. And Iraqi, traditional Iraqi oud, which is really big. And I imitate him with my hand, left hand on the fingerboard, and I tried to reach the string in my hand. And I did something. I don't know what I did, really. But he impressed so much. I mean, he was speechless. And he said, wow. You are a musician. I said, no, I'm not. He said, how did you do that? I said, what I did. I thought I did really something horrible, and I was really afraid. And he said, no, you are a musician. Take it. And he started teaching me and some scales, and I was, you know, playing with it, and I was absolutely crazy practicing the instrument. And the next day I was just playing. And by 6 months or more, actually almost 1 year, I did my first performance in the elementary school. And by 13, actually, I win the most prestigious award for Iraq, was for the youth composers, and I composed music for that time. And by age 16, I was fortunate to enter the conservatory, Baghdad Conservatory, that time.
I read in a 19th century writer in Baghdad said the oud places the temperament in equilibrium. It calms and it revives the heart. Is that what you feel when you
absolutely,
play it?
Absolutely. I mean, the instrument, actually, oud, is a really special instrument. I mean, of course, as we know, I don't know if the audience, you know that this instrument is 5,000 years old. And this is with the Sumerian time, and a cradle of civilization started in the southern Iraq, right? And they have oud, and there's women playing this oud, and they consider it actually a sacred instrument. And the fascinating things about the oud also is the way we play the oud, there's one way to play it, is to hug it, to be so close to it. It's like you hugging somebody you love, I mean, your baby, exactly. I mean, you can't play it like far away from any instrument you can imagine. In the world, there is no intimacy with the way you hold the instrument, except the oud. Because you must hug it tightly to your heart. I mean, you can feel the tone when you play. And that's why you said exactly temperament in the tone. So it's just really kind of mixed beautifully and harmonically with our body, basically, because you feel all the vibration of the sound and of the notes in your body, literally. So if you play, for example, violin or viola, I mean, you always hear, and so you don't have this intimacy of interaction with the instrument itself. It's built to be equal with our human voice.
Hmm. So it resonates some way.
Exactly. So the oud is basically when you play it, so you can talk I mean, when you sing, it's absolutely equal to the human voice.
Do you mind playing a little bit?
Oh, definitely. I think that's what I'm here.
Okay. Let's play and we'll talk. Play a little bit, and we'll talk some more after that.
Thank you.
That was beautiful. Is that, I'm curious, the you have one sort of core theme and then you're playing around it. Is that typical of your composition or is that typical of oud music?
No, this is my one of my composition actually. And this is one is it's called Dream. And what there's one theme that's going to go around to tell the story of Iraqi children.
Mm.
How they suffer during the sanction and during the war, basically. So the theme is going to go along with the story that these people talk about their tragic stories and movement and how their life is really is twisted, and they have no childhood anymore that time and period of Iraq during that time and during the sanctioning time, which is in 1991 to 13 years, right? So it really was horrible time for Iraq children. So I'm tried to, in this piece to give them voice to their story.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Global Music Show here on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick here with Michael Hess. And this is an interview we did with Rahim Alhaj, the master oud player from Iraq who now makes his home in New Mexico. He will be playing this Friday night as part of the Peace Talks radio benefit in Santa Fe at the James A. Little Theater. You can find out more by going to goodradioshows.org. How have you expressed themes like that of peace and reconciliation and war in your work?
Actually, all my work, it's about peace and love and compassion, and a lot of it about stories that I collect for children and women, because I believe that children, they don't have a voice. So I try to be their voice. I mean, not just Iraq, I mean, around the world, whatever stories I could get that really touch all of us as a human and this planet, and we need to share their stories. And sometimes a lot of their stories are not going to be heard if somebody cannot take it out. So, and women also, because they don't have a voice. So I'm trying to be their voice, to translate their story, translate their struggle and their life under bad circumstances like war, sanction, disasters, and mainly war, because war is the worst, actually, disaster you can imagine, or we can imagine, could happen to our life. Because Mother Nature, for example, nature is like could happen every 100 years or 200 years, sometimes even 1,000 years. But war, we can make it anytime we want. And the problem is we are the victim of it, and children and women.
How do you think music can foster peace?
Actually, music is the most important element to elaborate for peace, because it's a human and a universal language. So if I talk about Middle Eastern problem or even American problem or West, is this still the same because I have the same language? If I speak to Arabic to anybody, nobody will understand me. But if I pick my oud and I tell the story ever, musically, they can attach them and they can really imagine, if even not to understand what I'm trying to do, but at least you have chance to imagine what I'm trying to do. So it's very powerful language to share among all of us to promote peace around the world. And in fact, history also, we know that. I mean, during the war, most of the people that are going to be in the street and talk about it, it's the musician. And they go to the street and get their instruments and be in the street and sing, right? And people, they will really interact with them and then finally join them to present peace for this world.
You, when you were still living in Iraq under Saddam Hussein, you composed a song that was commenting on his regime, but it wasn't direct.
Right.
Am I correct?
Right. That's right. You know, like I said, and again, music is very powerful language that we can use to not just express ourselves, but to express our disasters and our tragedies and our stories. So I tried, and I was a peace activist at that time, and I was against the war. I'm still against the war, any war, which is, you know, during my time and this time, there's like 4 or 5 war I experienced in my life. So I composed music and songs, actually, against the Iran-Iraq war that time, from 1980 to 1988, which is we have 8 years of war with Iran, which is we lost 1 million people. And Iran, they lost 1.5 million, almost. And then we have 600,000 disabled. And so it's the cost is it's a huge, you know, plus, of course, all the disaster of the nature, for example. I mean, Iraq, which is one of the most important for palm trees, right? We lost 1.5 million trees from kind of fire and war at that time. So not just ourselves, our planet is suffering from war. So I try to really impose that and speak it as music. And it became very famous, actually, in Iraq. And it's like a voice for them. It's not necessarily an important song, but because it was talk to them. And you cannot say it directly to this regime, so they can use it and they can deny it. Well, no, talk about something else. So and they really became very kind of slogan in during that time to protest the war, Iran.
But it did get you in trouble.
Correct. As usual, always I'm in trouble. Yes, I did put in jail and imprisoned and tortured but that's the price. I mean, to be honest, I'm not saying everybody who has to be and to go to be in prison because he talk about peace, and that's the current time. Actually, this is time very important to us as a human being, as American, actually, because it's always war is a problem in this country, and we invade countries and we threaten countries, and right now it's really the time to talk about peace all the time, because it's very critical time for us as American.
You've gone back to Iraq since the U.S. invasion several times because you still have family
right
there. Is it safe for musicians to play the oud, or is
now,
it because of fundamentalists make it more dangerous?
Correct. Well, that time period after the invasion in Iraq, it becomes like more fundamental, you know, and there's sectarian violence and still actually happening in Iraq. And in fact, just in 2 months, we lost 1,545 people. I mean, 2 months. I mean, that's just last month. I mean, mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about August and July.
I'm sure most Americans don't know that.
Definitely. And so we're talking about 13 years. I mean, I'm sorry, it's like 11 years since 2003, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 10 years. So that's it's happening all the time. So anyway, the fundamentals are really trying to have a power there, and they repressure the musician and for religion reason, and that's haram, that's forbidden, it's not. But now it's actually coming back, and people, they understand there is some music is very important element in Iraqi life, and they have to continue no matter what. So I'm really glad that Iraqi Conservatory now is coming back. Musicians there who return back to Iraq and try to rebuild the music scene in Iraq.
Well, that's good to know.
Yes. Not really great, but enough. I mean, for example, all the Iraqi Symphony Orchestra, they left. Mm. I mean, I'm talking about Iraqi Symphony Orchestra is the first symphony orchestra in the whole Middle East. Yeah. Now it's coming back.
It's coming back.
Yeah. From a new player spell. In fact, they came twice or three times to U.S. and played with the National Symphony Orchestra in D.C. But again, they still, of course, they prosecuted this musician and here and there, but not really like in 2004 to 2006. This is really bad for all Iraqis, not just a musician, basically. That's the sectarian violence happened there in massively in Iraq. So who will suffer? The art, first one.
As you mentioned, you know, we have a problem in this country with war. I mean, you obviously were opposed to Saddam Hussein's regime, but you opposed the U.S. invasion and the war. And now we're talking about military action in Syria. And I know you lived there for a number of years after you fled Iraq. I'm wondering what you're thinking about these days.
That's a really good question. Yes, it's my home. Damascus is my home. I lived and saved my life, actually. I lived there more than almost 8 years until I came actually to the United States in 2000. And the ironic things of we talking about war against Syria, Obama said, we need to bomb them, but not to get rid of the regime. Well, how is that going to happen? And that's, I mean, what's striking me really is this. I mean, we fight Al-Qaeda, and we spend billions and billions and billions of dollars and a lot of great souls of Americans, right? They die there to fight the extremists there, Al-Qaeda. And now we need to support them in Syria. That doesn't make sense.
You mean the rebels?
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's not if you really this because they do not understand the complexity of this country, and all in Syria right now there is the extremists who come from all over the places, and they are absolutely nuts people from Chechnya and from Bolton, from you know Tunisia and Morocco and specifically Saudi Arabia. And actually, this is what ironic things about it. We talk about, of course, they have dictatorship in Syria. But you know what? The worse than the dictatorship in Syria is the Saudi dictatorship. It's the worst in the world. But we don't talk about it. Or actually, no. They are our allies, and we love them, and we support them no matter what. So I think this we should stop this madness. It's not up to this government to decide it. Who gonna live and who gonna die? Who told you? Who gave you this right to
you
decide?
You mean the American government?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Who gave you this right to decide I'm gonna kill you or keep you alive? And you have to understand this is not gonna solve the problem. Already you told me it's not gonna solve the problem. So why are you doing it? So we must as American and to stand to this and say this is not right. And because it's going to make the situation more complicated. Mm. My opinion is like there's nothing better than dialogue. You have to start dialogue. The language of violence is not going to solve the problem. When you kill people, you make them mad. What do you think when you kill thousands and thousands of people and say, I'm killing you because I need to free you? How? And they have to understand the complicity of the Syrian and between Shiite and Sunnis and Druze and Christian and so this is really complicated. And beside that, they have problem also. And this is the most important country in this region because it's very sensitive. I'm talking about Israel there, right? And you create chaos. And this chaos is not good for us as Americans. If we talk about security, we talk about national security. Now, how can you justify this? And you talk about homeland security, right? And you create more problem and more hatred to us. And I think we should, as American, we should, again, talk to our Congress, which is really great because Tom Udall, actually, I just heard him, mm-hmm. and where he imposed the invasion or whatever you call it, attack, which is massive attack. And they do not know, Syria or Damascus specifically, it's a very content city. It's just like old. It's the first capital in the world. Can you imagine? I mean, even it's a crime to bomb this city because it's a historic city. And you walk with in like 5,000 years old streets. And we talk about, you know, about history, we need to reserve history. And now we destroy it. We need to destroy it. So it's not going to work.
This is the Global Music Show on KUNM. I'm Megan Kamrick with Michael Hess. And you're listening to an interview we did with Rahim Al-Haj. He's a master oud player from Iraq who has made his home in New Mexico since 2000. He will be giving a concert as part of the Peace Talks Radio benefit this Friday, September 13th at the James A. Little Theater. You can find out more and buy tickets online at goodradioshows.org. You've lived through a dictatorship. You've been separated from your family. You live in exile. Now we're talking about the home, the place that gave you a home for many years in chaos, possibly more violence. Where do you find hope?
Actually, hope is everywhere. I mean, we have to keep hope because when we lose it, we will suffer as a human being. We have to keep hope that this world, we will turn it to good, not too bad. And unfortunately, violence will create violence. Hatred create hatred. Breed it. It's going to breed it no matter what. Nobody will come to your house and kill your kids and you tell him thank you. No. That's simple. So I think we have to, we must keep the hope alive so we can turn this, our planet that we live in, all of us, to keep it safe. And to keep it safe from these politicians that who they don't care except their interest. And actually whom? The corporation. And they don't care. And now if we think of Obama, he said, well, I'm just strike him. I don't send the soldier there. This is not about sending the soldiers. It's about the principles of the world. I mean, you cannot create a problem and say to solve the problem. Hmm. This is not going to work. You know, I've lived, like I said, from exile to exile. And I felt finally have a home. It's called New Mexico. My record, one of my records is I have pieces about New Mexico, Baghdad, New Mexico, and that's my home. Now, how can I feel? And my wife from Syria, she lost already three of her people, her nephew and her cousin and her brothers, in the war right now. So I'm in it. I'm not just lived and this is my home, Syria. This is my wife also, who's suffering right now, really, and struggling with that. And she loves New Mexico. She feels like this is her home. And now her home attacking her mother home. Mm. You see that complex? You know, it's really hard to adjust, to comprehend.
Do you mind giving us a song to end with?
Right.
Might give us hope.
Yes.
Peace. Since we know that music has the power to do that.
And this one, actually, it's called Closeness. And it's to keep us more close as a human. And I wrote it actually for my mom, who saved my life. And how we become really, you know, close to each other and to have dialogue and to have dialogue between me and her. And when it's knocking on her door when I was a kid, when I be, you know, come late, again late, so I have to give her, you know, really some specific notes in the door, so that me, so open it, in that case, my father not wake up and then give me a hard time. So this is for hope for all of us. Thank you.
Is that on one of your CDs?
Yes. This is in my record, I think. It's Home Again.
Home Again.
Yes.
Rahim, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
I know that you didn't plan to spend the rest of your life in New Mexico. But we're very glad to have you here.
Thank you very much. This is my home, and I'm really, really honored to be in New Mexico. I was talking to my friend actually yesterday, and my dear friend in Houston. I told him, you know what, soon I leave in New Mexico, I miss New Mexico a lot, so I need to come back. It's like crazy to New Mexico. So this is my home.